Hello, and welcome to Southern Living Magazine, brought to you by OWL Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Angela Odie, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from the November 2019 issue of Southern Living. Please enjoy. From Life at Southern Living, here's the letter from the editor, Sid Evans. Cooking that counts. There's a reason we turn to these Junior League classics year after year. When we spend Thanksgiving with my family in Memphis, as we're doing this year, my mother always pulls down the same three spiral-bound cookbooks, River Road Recipes by the Junior League of Baton Rouge, 1959, Party Potpourri by the Junior League of Memphis, and Jambalaya by the Junior League of New Orleans, 1980. As you might expect, they are stained and spattered, with yellowing pages, broken bindings, and plenty of scrawled notes in Mom's elegant script, usually, needs more spice. There are others she turns to, but these are the old faithfuls, the ones she trusts when everything is on the line, in other words, when family is coming. Given how many copies of these cookbooks were sold, there's a good chance you have one in your kitchen too. River Road Recipes is the gold standard, with more than 1.3 million copies purchased, and the other two sold well over $100,000, channeling millions of dollars back into funding Junior League projects. They taught generations of Southern women how to cook, championed the traditions and ingredients that made these communities unique, and turned some of their contributors into local celebrities. But what's the secret to their staying power? For Marcia Evans, it's all about the Gruyere cheese grits and party potpourri. It's my go-to starch for all my fancy dinners, she told me recently. In River Road Recipes, she loves the oyster casserole, page 105 if you have it handy, with Worcestershire sauce, cracker crumbs, butter, and lemon. The kids never ate it, she says, but that just meant more for us. And in Jambalaya, she loves the cold crab meat salad, a lunchtime mainstay that's always a hit. In an age when there are hundreds of millions of recipes online, she returns to these because they work. Every time. They're also part of the Evans tradition now, as familiar as aunts and uncles. I've been spending some time with Party Potpourri, which is sadly out of print, because of an invitation to speak at a celebration of the book by the Junior League of Memphis. This is not the first time it's been recognized by us. In 1993, we named it to the Southern Living Community Cookbook Hall of Fame. The book's editors, Mary Joy Knowlton and Barbara Prest, made the trip to our offices in Birmingham, where they were feted with a dinner and treated like rock stars. Of course, they were representing the work of dozens of women, editors, writers, typists, six of them, and recipe testers, who worked on the book for 3 years. I hear a lot of people talk about making the South a better place, but these cookbooks and the women behind them actually did it, and Junior Leagues around the world continue to do it. Over 140,000 Junior League members are volunteering in their communities, working to solve problems of poverty, hunger, addiction, and many other issues that challenge society. They've also embraced diversity and inclusion, both in terms of their membership and their leadership. In my book, that's something to be grateful for. Happy Thanksgiving. From the Home and Garden section, The Grumpy Gardener, Our Garden Expert Alleviates Your Growing Pains, by Steve Bender. Torched Fern. When I was teaching elementary school, I had a huge maidenhair fern in my classroom. The plant got tons of indirect light. Then I retired and brought it home. The next day, it looked like someone had taken a torch to it. Do you know why? Debbie. I sure hope you weren't teaching horticulture. I might have to speak to the principal. The reaction of your maidenhair fern was due to the abrupt change in growing conditions. Find a bright window at home that supplies indirect light. Keep the soil evenly moist and mist the foliage daily during the winter to increase the humidity. It should adjust to its new home in a few weeks. Class dismissed. How much mulch? I have a fairly thick layer of pine straw mulch under my shrubs. Should I remove the old straw and replace it, Marilyn? No, I would let it stay. As it decomposes, it will add organic matter to the soil. If you put new straw on top, make sure the resulting mulch isn't more than 3 inches thick. carpenter ant crackdown. My neighbor had an oak tree that fell over in a storm last winter. Ants had eaten out the inside of the trunk. How can I prevent the same fate from befalling my trees? Kathleen. Carpenter ants were the culprits. They don't eat wood like termites do, but hollow out chambers for their nests. They usually gain entrance to the tree from a hole or crack in the bark near the ground. Extensive damage like what happened to your neighbor's tree is rare. Look for sawdust at the bases of trees and trails of black or brown ants entering and exiting. If you spot either, place some Taro outdoor liquid ant bait stations around the infested trees. Aphid remedy. We found aphids all over the leaves of our indoor plants. Is there something we can use to kill them that's safe to apply inside? Neil and Sharon. Indeed there is. Liquid dishwashing detergent. Add several drops to a quart-sized spray bottle filled with water. Shake it up and then spray the aphids to kill them right away. Christmas cactus care. A while back, you wrote about what to do with a Christmas cactus after it finishes blooming, but I failed to write down the suggestions. Can you repeat them for me? Mary. Are you this lax in other areas vital to society? I grant you one last chance. When the Christmas cactus is done flowering, keep it indoors in bright light until after your last spring frost. Then take it outside and place it in the shade. Water once a week, making sure that excess water doesn't sit at the bottom of the pot. Feed with Miracle-Gro once a month from spring to fall. Be sure when it's outside that the area is dark at night, i.e. no security lights. If it isn't dark, flower buds will not form. Bring the plant back inside before the first fall frost. Grumpy's Gripe of the Month. Many of you want to plant a Meyer lemon tree despite the fact that they are winter hardy only to about 20 degrees. Sure, it does sound quite sophisticated to grow lemons in pots on the patio for your afternoon cocktails, but eventually the tree will get too big to move indoors for the winter. People ask me, can't I plant it out in the yard? No, it won't take extended cold, so either add a sunroom onto your house, move to South Florida, or buy lemons like the rest of us. From the Travel and Culture section, your guide to the South now. Off the Eaton Path, the Memphis barbecue bucket list. 7 must-visit joints for the best smoked meats in the city by Robert Moss. Memphis is one of the few southern cities that can claim its own widely recognized barbecue style. It has been famous for ribs since the 1920s, when John Mills wowed visiting celebrities like Bing Crosby with his pit-cooked slabs. But Memphians will barbecue just about anything. Beef, pork, chicken, sausage, turkey. They'll even smoke whole rolls of bologna, which they slice and serve between two pieces of white bread, transforming this humble lunch meat into a sinfully rich treat. The pits in Memphis tend to be fired not with split logs, but charcoal briquettes, which impart a distinctive juicy and mildly smoky flavor to the meat. The signature sauce is thick, tangy, and reddish-brown, and it can range from unassumingly mild to tongue-scorchingly hot. Yellow mustard-laced slaw and sweet but savory beans are the standard side dishes, along with barbecue spaghetti, an eccentric combination of pasta, pork, and barbecue sauce found only in Memphis. This list of restaurants could be longer, but you won't find better places to taste the city's inimitable style than at these 7 spots. The Barbecue Shop. Visit the home of Barbecue Spaghetti, Memphis's unique contribution to Southern barbecue sides. The Vernon family still uses the recipe created by Brady Vincent, the restaurant's original owner. It's the ideal accompaniment for a platter of succulent half-and-half ribs, which are dry-rubbed on one end and mopped with sauce on the other, a delicious compromise uniting the city's competing wet and dry styles. Charlie Vargas Rendezvous. Back in the 1940s, Charlie Vargas took a few racks of ribs, rubbed them down with a spice blend borrowed from his father's Greek chili recipe, and cooked them hot and fast over charcoal in a pit fashioned from an old coal chute. The Rendezvous has been the revered home of Memphis-style dry-rubbed ribs ever since. cozy corner restaurant. Beneath a sweet and tangy glaze of sauce, the ribs at Cozy Corner burst with intense wood smoke flavor, and the meat is pleasantly firm and chewy. You can order the brown sauce mild, medium, or hot. But beware, even the medium will leave your lips tingling. In an unusual twist on the barbecue sandwich, they tuck thin sliced pork or beef inside long sesame-topped sub rolls with plenty of bright yellow slaw. A&R Barbecue. The chopped pork sandwich at A&R is a wonder. The first bite explodes with flavor, the tender meat merging into the warm, soft bun with cool, crisp pops of slaw. The rib sandwich is even better, a short, meaty slab, wedged, bones and all, between two slices of plain white bread with lots of slaw and A&R's signature sauce. The Pollard family still cooks barbecue on old-school charcoal-fired pits, and the sauce here is thick and only moderately sweet, the perfect partner for what may be the best smoked pork in Memphis. Payne's Barbecue. Big, sloppy sandwiches are the name of the game at Payne's. They're piled so high with finely chopped pork, golden slaw, and a pool of sticky sweet sauce that you'll need a plastic fork to scoop up every last scrap, not to mention lots of napkins. In a city known for putting anything from beef to spaghetti in its pits, Payne's menu is a minimalist exception. Just chopped pork and ribs, plus a little sausage and bologna. Interstate Barbecue. Jim Neely founded this place back in 1979, and it has been one of the city's top smoked rib destinations ever since. Their chopped pork sandwiches are notable, too. Pro tip for air travelers. If you miss the original 3rd Street location, grab a sandwich at the Memphis International Airport. There's an Interstate Barbecue next to Gate C7. Central Barbecue. With pulled pork, brisket, chicken, turkey, sausage, and even smoked portobello mushrooms, Central Barbecue can please the fussiest of crowds. It now has 4 locations around the city, from the original Midtown joint on Central Avenue, which gave the restaurant its name, to a newer spot downtown. Praying for Pie. A little patience can fill a heart with sweet gratitude. By Cassandra King. My mother told a funny story about me as a kindergartner. After hearing a lesson about Thanksgiving at school for the first time, I came home in tears and cried out, "We're not going to eat the turkey, are we?" Mama tried to comfort me, though she was a bit mystified. After all, I was born on a farm and understood why we raised chickens, pigs, and cows. Farm kids know where food comes from. Prodding me further, she discovered the real reason for my tears. "But Mama," I wailed, "if we eat the turkey, who's going to bring me presents?" Evidently, I'd confused the turkey with the Easter bunny, but it was the ideal learning opportunity. What parent could resist explaining that Thanksgiving wasn't about getting gifts, that it was about giving, sharing, and expressing gratitude? Not my mother. Instead of berating me for being greedy, she declared I was old enough to help fix dessert for the holiday. She got me at the right age, when helping in the kitchen sounded better than getting a basket from a turkey. Because we lived in the Deep South, our special occasion pies were sweet potato, an ingredient harvested and abundant in the fall. I was full grown before I tasted pumpkin pie. Although Mama made caramel glazed yams every Thanksgiving and Christmas, no one called them yams otherwise. They were sweet taters. A persnickety cook, my mom baked the potatoes, never boiled them, and peeled them hot. Then came my job. She put them in a mixing bowl and handed me the potato masher. Beating the butter into them was more fun than I'd had in a long time. Less joyous was helping with the pie crust. Mama soon took over because I was overdoing it, evidently a mortal sin when it came to rolling pastry. Into the still warm potatoes, she stirred cream, sugar, eggs, and a bit of mace, and then divided the mixture among 6 pastry-lined pans. When they were baked to a golden brown, I could hardly wait for a taste. But wait I must. In my childhood home, the kids ate in the kitchen, while the adults got the fancy fixings in the dining room. On that November day, I counted relatives, praying for enough dessert to go around. After the turkey and dressing feast, my mother called on me to pass out pie. In a hand-smocked dress, I performed my duty nervously, eyes on the prize. In the end, as feared, only one pie was left, which Mama took to the kids' table. She divvied it up and then said, "Now y'all say your blessing." "Uncle Johnny already did," I said, surprised. Mama smiled and replied, "I know, but aren't you especially grateful right this moment?" Her meaning became clear when my cousins and I joined hands and bowed our little heads. Even at such a young age, I knew, somehow, that our shared gratitude went far beyond a single slice of sweet potato pie. Our trash can turkey tradition. For one Kentucky family, Thanksgiving means all the usual trimmings and, yes, the main course, cooked in a trash can, by Betsy Cribb. The Latham's Midway Kentucky farm is idyllic on all counts. Theirs is a textbook horse country, rolling green hills dotted with mature trees and crisscrossed by a spindly web of black wooden fences. The 1850s farmhouse, with wide porches and steep gables, piped with gingerbread trim, feels right at home in the bucolic landscape. It's a friendly-looking house, one that seems like it's seen a fair share of celebrations, and it has. Since they moved in 6 years ago, Shannon Latham and her husband, Devont, have hosted some 20 family members for Thanksgiving nearly every year. "It's almost like being at camp," says Shannon of the five-day celebration that brings together relatives of all ages. "We're singing songs that you sing when you're five because we have a five-year-old here, and then the children get to hear the grandparents' favorites from their day, so it's all just very endearing and heartwarming." More treasured than the old campfire tunes, though, are the other rituals that have been passed down over the years. We're trying to preserve the Southern tradition of using our cherished heirlooms and teaching the next generation to do the same, says Shannon, who owns and runs the children's clothier Little English, littleenglish.com, with her daughter, Dunn. Creating these memories is so important, and for me, it starts with a Thanksgiving table. I usually set it 2 days ahead, but always leave several things to be done so that all the girls in the family can help finish it. My mother-in-law gave me her mother's linens, and we use them every year. To see her lay her hands on those pieces that were given to her and that she gave to me is just really special. Yes, they polish the silver and set the table with china, but the Latham's holiday festivities are far from stuffy, thanks in part to an unconventional turkey cooking method inspired by family travels. One year, my parents were bringing their boat up the Tennessee Tombigbee Waterway and stopped in Columbus, Mississippi, says Shannon. When they got off, they saw a bunch of trash cans sitting out in a big open field. They thought, "What in the world?" And someone told them, "Oh, you've docked just in time. We're having a trash can turkey cook-off." My father loved it, so he came back and told everybody all about it. The next November, Devont smoked a turkey in an overturned metal trash can warmed by a heaping pile of hot coals. It was a hit. His humbly cooked bird earned a prized place on the buffet, right next to Shannon's more conventional oven-roasted turkey. It's become kind of a competition between his trash can turkey and my oven-roasted version to see whose is the best, she says with a laugh. The cook-off is spectacular fun and sets the scene. It's sort of like tailgating. We're waiting on it all day, watching it, stoking the coals, and then the big reveal is really exciting, too. Of course, the trash can method has its drawbacks, says Shannon. The makeshift 20-gallon metal smoker is more open to the elements and uses a wooden stake to hold the bird. One year, Devont's turkey was so perfectly cooked and tender that when he lifted the trash can to do the reveal, we realized the turkey had fallen completely off the stake. It was good to eat, but not anything to look at. It was in bits and pieces, for sure. But that's just part of the fun, she says. For Shannon and her family, Thanksgiving is about keeping cherished traditions alive, trash can turkey and all. Memory makers, multiple generations come for the family get-together. prime setting. The dining room table is dressed to the nines with an eclectic mix of formal heirlooms and newer, more casual pieces. Classic dishes. Dinner is a team effort, and the menu includes plenty of old family recipes, from rice consommé to green tomato pickle. Grateful hands. The youngest children make paper turkeys, and then everybody writes down what they're thankful for. Signature cocktail. A Bloody Mary bar that's stocked with Zing Zang mix, the Lathams' favorite, and an array of toppings, invites guests to help themselves. From the home and garden section, social graces, help for the controlling hostess. It's the holidays. Say yes to the cheese straws, by Elizabeth Passarella. If you are, let's say, particular about how you entertain, then the holidays can be equal parts exhilarating and exasperating. Your hosting Olympics marred slightly by having to fit in decathlon coverage. This is because you have an idea of how you want Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas Eve cocktails to go, and people around you want to help. I completely understand where you're coming from, because I'm also a controlling person in many areas, not just entertaining. Southerners are often so good at hosting that we let the rogue, full-wrapped offering get under our skin. I, for one, don't like surprises in the form of unexpected cheese straws that upset my appetizer balance, and when people offer to assist me in the kitchen, a small troll that lives in my gut starts to shiver in panic. I've found that hosts with this type of personality tend to respond in one of two ways when people ask what they can bring. It's either, "Nothing, just yourselves," or, "If you'd like to make a dip, eggplant caponata would work with the rest of the menu. Here's the link to the recipe I like, only I leave out the capers." The problem with the first response is that guests will bring something anyway, and while a more free-spirited hostess may be golden with that, you are not. The second should be reserved for a relative you're comfortable with. Let's find the middle ground, because holiday gatherings should be joyful, and no one but you really cares about the appetizer balance. Everybody else is too busy admiring your magnolia leaf mantle swag because you nailed that sucker. You can say, "Bring nothing," and then roll with whatever comes in. If it's a bag of spiced pecans, tuck it away. But if it's stuffed mushrooms on a platter, you need to set those out. A better option, if you are going to loosen your standards, is to do it strategically. I often request beverages, being specific but not tyrannical. We could always use seltzer, or we're heavy on Manhattans but light on wine, so please bring whatever you love. If someone texts me en route to the party, I usually ask for a bag of ice. People like to help, and you don't get a ribbon at the end of the day for not accepting any. My mother-in-law didn't cook. In the past, if I hosted Thanksgiving, I'd tell her not to bring anything, thinking I was helping her by giving her an out. She would lovingly order 6 dishes from her country club and pile them on my dining table. We went on like that for years. Now, I ask her to get the club's mashed potatoes, which reheat well, and a store-bought pie. She still brings at least one more thing, and I happily serve it too. I've learned that unbuttoning always feels good, physically and metaphorically, which brings me to my words of advice for the loved ones of the control freaks. The most compassionate act might be to give us a choice. I can bring a bottle of Prosecco or the shrimp toast I made for book club last month. Would either be helpful? That's friendship. Also, when your hostess says to go have dessert and stop loading the dishwasher, please do so. She means it. From the home and garden section, beautiful spaces, inside and out. Holiday decorating. Preserve the beauty. Dried flowers, foliage, and grasses will keep your home looking festive all season long. By Grace Haynes. Go wild. This lively centerpiece is bursting with texture and can be disassembled and used again next year. Place florist foam in a container, secure with two pieces of florist tape. Then add dried pampas grasses around the outer edges to provide shape. Repeat step with oak leaves. Working toward the middle, insert stardust gypsophilas. For depth, fill in the middle with dried straw flowers at various heights. Nestle gourds into the center and outer edges of arrangement. Finish with dried bunny tails. What you'll need: dried pampas grass in natural and brown, preserved oak leaves, preserved stardust gypsophila in natural tones, bleached stardust gypsophila, dried straw flowers in pink and apricot, gourds, wired, and dried bunny tails in chocolate brown. Embrace the imperfect. Give a grapevine wreath a new silhouette with sheaves of grasses. Moving in a clockwise direction, insert stems of pampas grass and gypsophilas to fill out the wreath's shape. Then add accents like dried yarrow, sitaria grass, okra pods, and pheasant feathers in groups of 3 to 5 to the top left side. What you'll need: 18-inch grapevine wreath, dried pampas grass, preserved stardust gypsophila, bleached stardust gypsophila, dried yarrow, dried sitaria grass, dried okra pods, and pheasant feathers. Exaggerate fall's foliage. Make your front door stand out with this easy-to-assemble wreath. Working in a clockwise direction, cover the grapevine wreath with preserved red sycamore leaves, adding them to the underside as well to give both depth and a varied shape. Next, insert 3 to 5 groupings of preserved plume reed grass, oregano, pine cones, and phalaris grass. What you'll need: 18-inch grapevine wreath, preserved red sycamore leaves, preserved plume reed grass, dried ornamental oregano, pine cones — we used artificial ones on florist picks from a local craft store — and dried phalaris grass dyed a berry wine shade. Compose your sideboard. Pull together a setup that lasts all month. For a soft glow, light the candles when it's time to entertain. Single ingredient groupings of pampas grass and yarrow make the greatest impact. Add warm touches to complement the arrangements with a bowl of gourds, glass hurricanes filled with cinnamon sticks and pecans, and orange and cream candles. Dishes of pecans and acorns complete the look. What you'll need: dried pampas grass, dried yarrow in natural yellow, gourds, cinnamon sticks, pecans, and acorns. What's in store? It's a cocktail party. Cheers to fun, colorful napkins from Southern Shops, produced by Paige Mullins. Sunny Delight. Embroidered monograms add personality to citrus-hued linens with a satin stitch border. From $14 each. TheLoveliestCompany.com. Tasseled Touch. The rust-toned embellishments hit just the right harvest note for your Thanksgiving table. $11 each. HibiscusLinens.com. Miss Piggy. Farm animals are totally acceptable on the table when they're cute, pale pink, and designed in Texas. $50 for a set of 4. Biscuit-home.com. Thank you for listening to today's Southern Living Magazine. If you have questions or comments about this program, please call us at 210-829-4223. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Angela Odie saying goodbye from Al Radio, and have a great weekend.